this week, February 24th, 2015, on The Digital Story. Selling your excess photo gear for fun and profit. New Panasonic lenses. My favorite mirrorless accessory is made by Canon. Photo book giveaway. All this and more with yours truly, Derek Story, on The Digital Story. Welcome back to another Digital Story. Great stuff this week. Lots of fun things to talk about. We're going to start out with a weekly update. I got some news items for you. Then we'll roll into a few feature stories. We're going to do a book giveaway. I like that. And then we'll wrap up with a little virtual camera club news. Nice and tidy for the week of February 24th. So let's start out with the weekly update. Panasonic introduces the Lumix G 30mm macro and new 42.5mm Portrait Prime. The 42.5 f1.7 isn't quite as fast, or presumably as expensive, as the existing Leica 42.5 f1.2. It does offer power OIS stabilization, and is also compatible with 240 frames per second drive AF. It will be offered in black and silver versions. No pricing has been given for either lens, but they're scheduled to become available in May. And the source of this story is DP Review. Both of these lenses intrigue me a little bit, in the sense that Panasonic does have a macro lens already for Micro Four Thirds. And as I said in the copy here, they already have a 42.5mm lens. However, it's a f1.2 and it costs a lot of money. A lot of money. It's a beautiful lens. It's also a big lens. I mean, one of the advantages of, presumably, of this new 42.5 f1.7 is that it's going to be lighter and smaller, easier to pack. But, however, neither one of these lenses break new ground in what they do. So I think what Panasonic is doing is sort of rounding out its offering so that you have options in the macro category, you have options in the prime portrait lens category, and so forth. We'll be curious to find out what the prices are actually going to be. If the prices are very competitive, then I would say that rounds out the catalog even more. So we'll know more in May, and until then, just know, a few new lenses coming from Panasonic. In other news, there's this company called Konost. K-O-N-O-S-T. Konost? I don't know where the emphasis goes. We'll say Konost. I like it better. So anyway, they have a new camera here that they're working on. So I'm just going to read you the copy, then we'll talk about it for a second. So Konost hopes to launch the world's first true digital rangefinder. But Leica already makes a quality digital rangefinder camera, you may be thinking to yourself. That's correct, but Leica's offerings are digital cameras with mechanical rangefinder systems. Konost means it is turning its back on the age-old system of mirrors and prisms used in mechanical rangefinder cameras and instead opting for a digital rangefinder system powered by a secondary image sensor. And the source of this story is Petapixel. And of course, the links to both stories will be in today's show notes. So I went over to the site and took a look at this camera, the Konost. And it's a beautiful camera. I mean, it has this minimalist design, a little bit of Leica DNA in it. Now, Leica's not going to sue them for design infringement or anything. It's different enough, but you definitely get the Leica vibe from this camera. And in fact, they're made to be compatible with Leica lenses, which that's one thing I was sort of thinking about. So they're going to make a full-frame version, an APS-C version, and a 1-inch sensor version. The full-frame and APS-C versions will take Leica lenses, which they're, I mean, that's really going to drive the cost of things up right there. I mean, even on the used market, Leica lenses are not cheap. And then the 1-inch is just going to have a fixed lens, And it'll be a plastic body instead of that nice metal body that we're looking at. And I was thinking, what a cool camera idea to have this digital rangefinder where you have a second sensor that then is moving the image, another image, over the image that you're focusing on and getting this really cool focusing effect in the viewfinder. Wouldn't it be nice if they made it to take Micro Four Thirds lenses instead of Leica lenses? Then we would have this entire catalog of optics that are affordable that would work with a lot of cameras that are out there already. I mean, a lot more people shoot Micro Four Thirds than shoot Leica. Wouldn't that be really neat? But they went the Leica route. Now, they haven't announced pricing or anything yet, and we probably won't see the cameras until 2016. But as I said, I have the link to the story in the show notes, and you can go take a look at the camera. They're raising money right now. A lot of things are happening, especially launching three bodies in the same year, 2016. That's a pretty big endeavor. But it's fascinating, and I would love to look through the viewfinder and see how this digital rangefinder works once they pull it off. And that is this week's Weekly Update. Story number one, selling your excess gear. Anyone that's been shooting for a while has a fair amount of photography gear. That's just the way that it normally works. And as time goes on, we tend to use certain cameras more than others, certain lenses, and so forth. And that other gear, that gear that isn't getting used as much, seems like a shame just to have it sitting there. So my philosophy has been to move gear along to other people who can use it when I find that I'm not shooting with it anymore and I have either a newer version of it or something that has replaced it. Now, there are certain sentimental items, of course, that I will hang on to forever, most likely, but there's a lot of stuff also that can be moved on to a new owner. And I have played with different ways to do this over the years, different ways to sell the gear, and I was thinking, I've never really done a story on this. So I thought, okay, today I'll share with you some of the ways that I move gear along. Now, there are a few things that I don't sell. I never sell filters, any kind of filter, protection filter, polarizing filter, all that kind of stuff. And the reason being, because as lenses come and go, it's nice to have a stash of filters and all the different sizes that I can use on those lenses right away. So I don't have to buy new filters or, you know, wait to have a filter on the lens. So I keep filters on hand. And as you know, filters are not cheap. So once I make that investment, I usually hang on to filters because a 58 millimeter filter will work on a variety of lenses. It's worked on my Canon lenses. It works on my Panasonic lenses, things like that. So I do hang on to filters. I do keep the original boxes. I keep the original paperwork, front caps, lens caps, the bag, if they include a bag, lens hoods, all that sort of stuff. I hang on to all of that, and I keep it stored. I actually have an area here where I store all the boxes. And that does come in really handy when you're selling, because if you've kept the lens in good shape, and you have the box, and you have all the original packing material, that's very appealing to someone that's buying it, because it feels like that they're getting essentially the same kit that they would get if they bought it new, but at a discount. And, even when I buy used gear, I love that sort of thing. So I don't sell filters, but I do hang on to all the original packaging. Okay, now that being said, when it's time to sell something, I usually will go through and look at the items. I do this about once a year. Go through, look at the items I haven't been using, and then really think about why I haven't used them, and what I use them for and in the past, and then what I'm using instead now. Now, this year, for example, as you heard in last week's podcast, if you listened, I'm selling off some of my Canon DSLR gear. I'm not selling off my whole Canon kit. I still have the 5D Mark II. I still have the 70D, and I still have seven lenses, the 7200 f2.8, things like that. but I also have some duplication. For example, before I had the 70 to 200 millimeter f/2.8, I had a 70 to 200 millimeter f/4, and that's what I used. And then I got the f/2.8, and I wasn't using the 4 nearly as much. Now, the 4 is nice when you're traveling. It's a bit lighter. Even that is not an issue for me anymore, because now when I'm traveling, I'm using Micro Four Thirds and not my DSLR kit. The DSLR kit is what I'm using for my commercial shoots, for the pro shoots in the area here, where I can put the kit in the trunk of the car, drive there, and do what I need to do. So the 70 to 200 millimeter f/4 was a perfect example of a lens that was very valuable and useful to me when I first got it. But now, as things have changed, I'm not using it at all anymore. It was just sitting there on the shelf. So I kept the 70 to 200 millimeter f/2.8. That's what I will use for my upcoming commercial shoots where I need that sort of lens. And I sold the 70 to 200 millimeter f/4. Another area where I had some duplication, I had the 16 to 35 millimeter zoom for Canon, and I had the 17 to 40. I had the 17 to 40 first, and then later on, a few years later, I was able to get the 16 to 35. Both of those lenses are great. And again, the 17 to 40 is lighter and it's a little bit smaller, so it was a nice lens to have for travel. Now, when I'm traveling, I'm using Micro Four Thirds, so I wasn't using that lens anymore. So I hung on to the 16 to 35 f/2.8. And I sold the 17 to 40. So that's sort of the thinking that goes on there. Now, the money that I raised selling the old gear will pay for the EM5 Mark II that I have pre-ordered and the hand grip that goes with it. And I will still have a couple thousand dollars in the slush fund for gear this year to use for other things that come up that, you know, things that I can't even anticipate right now. So my whole year is set in terms of equipment investment. The money is set already based on selling off stuff that I'm not using anymore. So how do I sell this stuff? Well, I've gone through all sorts of different ways. Originally, the way that I sold gear was through Craigslist. Craigslist.org. And the reason why I liked that approach, I would actually meet with the person who was buying the stuff. So I would post it on Craigslist for the Bay Area here, the San Francisco Bay Area. When someone was interested, they'd contact me, and then we would arrange a place to meet, usually somewhere in between where both of us were, usually a Starbucks. And I would take the item there. They would have a chance to inspect it, play with it. We'd talk, all that kind of stuff. If they liked it, then they would pay me the money. I'd give them a receipt. They would walk off with the item. I would walk off with the money. And that would be the end of it. Because there are no surprises, right? They got to see everything. It worked. They got to test it. We're done. And that was one of the reasons why I've liked Craigslist over the years. Because the deal is done. Once you do it. For instance, if you sell something on eBay, you're doing, you know, your best description of it. And then the buyer has certain expectations. They get it. And then there's a higher chance that their expectations aren't met by what you do. Then you have this whole thing where they want to send it back. They don't want it. And you have to do all that financial wrangling. So I wanted to avoid that, and that's why I used Craigslist for the longest time. Now, I have moved on since then, and I think Craigslist, by the way, is still good when you're just selling an item every now and then, and you live in an area where there are a lot of people, so that you can run an ad just in your general metropolitan area, and you have enough people to where there's a buyer or two in there. So I think it's great under those circumstances. What's happened is I started selling more stuff this year and last year, and I just didn't have the time to manage Craigslist. In other words, I didn't have the time to, you know, go on the meetings every time I wanted to sell something. I needed to do something more efficient. Plus, I have the store set up, the Nimble Photographer store. So I already have all the shipping materials and all the stuff that I need to actually send stuff out. So I didn't go the eBay route, though, this time. I went another route, and actually, I got turned on to this route through Frederick Van Johnson. He's the one that told me about it. Never even dawned on me. He was selling his used gear through Amazon Marketplace. And Amazon Marketplace is very interesting. And the way that it works is that if you look something up on Amazon, and, you know, it has, okay, here it is, here's the new item, sold by Amazon, yada, yada, yada. But there's almost always a link that says, and 15 used items available starting at this price. And you click on the link and you get to see who the other 15 people are that are selling, or outlets or whatever. Well, when you sell on Amazon Marketplace, you become one of those 15. In other words, so it'll be sometimes they're regular camera stores and other times they're individuals like me selling off excess gear. And they have enough of it where it's worth it to set up a marketplace to do that. So that's what I've been doing. I've been selling on Amazon Marketplace, and I like it for a couple reasons. One is you have such a large audience to expose your gear to. So lots and lots of people, you know, looking at what you have to sell. Second, Amazon is very organized in how they run their marketplace. As a seller, I have to abide by their rules, and they have high quality standards. And if I don't do that, then I get penalized. They'll even put my stuff on hold. And I actually like that. I like knowing that I'm working with an outfit that has high standards, and they're going to hold me to those standards also. They have an excellent payment system within a period. Whatever you sell, that all gets rolled up. They take out their fees. And then they'll hold a little bit just for disputes. And you have to have a credit card on file too, just in case things get really wacky and out of control. And then they either make a direct deposit or however you've chosen for them to pay you once a month based on the items that were sold within that period. You have an inventory page where you get to manage all the items that you have for sale. And you have different stages. So, for instance, when you first put it up, then it's there and you can see that it's available and the quantity and all that stuff. And then once it's sold, then you can print out the invoice. And then either you can ship it or you can have Amazon ship it. There's a lot of options here. And so far, it's gone very smoothly. I really like doing it. Story number two. Why I added a Canon TTL flash cord to my mirrorless kit. There are some things you just don't think are going to work. But interestingly enough, the off-camera flash cord, dedicated flash cord for Canon, works with Olympus, Panasonic, and Fujifilm mirrorless cameras. And it's really interesting. And how I was able to test this out kind of happened in waves. Julio, one of the Lumix luminaries, was over at the studio for the podcast that we did last week. And, you know, while we were fooling around before we recorded, he wanted to try this. I said, well, yeah, I've got one of those. I shoot Canon. I have one of the off-camera flash cords. And so we tried it with the Panasonic, I believe, GM5, and the little clip-on flash that came with it. And doggone it, if it didn't work. And so he was able to have just this little baby flash up off the camera and, you know, directing the light the way he wanted. And I thought, wow, that's pretty neat. So I was thinking, well, then if he can do it with Panasonic, does it work with my Olympus gear? So then I put the flash cord on the OMD EM10, and the little, one of the little flashes, one of the little external flashes, I forget which one, it's the little silver one. Not only did it work, I had full TTL capability, and I could even adjust exposure compensation on the camera, and it worked on the flash. So again, just carry around this little flash, have the cord, and it was just very easy to set up, and I could work very quickly. Now, obviously, you can do wireless with the Olympus flashes, but then you have the whole line of sight and all that kind of stuff. And sometimes it works better than others. Whereas with the chord, you just put the chord in and boom, you know, there's no questions. The connection's there and the flash works. And especially when you're under the gun, you know, with a client or some sort of situation where you just have to get the shot quickly, the chord is pretty nice. And then the third thing was, I was writing a blog post for Rocky Nook on the new manual that they just published for the Fujifilm X-T1. And so, you know, I'm reading the guide. It's a really good book. If you shoot Fujifilm, you really want to check out the guide that Rocky Nook just published on the X-T1. It's excellent. But, I'm reading through it looking for tips for the blog post. And sure enough, he was talking about using a Canon flash cord with the Fujifilm and how it worked with their flashes. So I got to write about this. I mean, this is just too good. So I did a post on Digital Story, and I just wanted to capture it here in case you missed it, because I know not everyone that listens to the podcast always goes over to the site regularly. You may have missed it. But if you're shooting with any of those brands and you have a Canon flash cord around or you run into one, it works, and it's really nice. And now I have that flash cord in my kit. And I love having that little off-camera flash cord because a lot of the lighting things I do, the flash only has to be a few feet from the camera for me to get the effect that I want. So I just wanted to pass that along to you. It's a great little tip, and hopefully it'll help some of you. Okay, let's stroll over to the screening room. I have a great choice for you today. They're always good choices, aren't they? But today's choice is Portrait Project, Enhancing an Environmental Portrait of a Model with Chris Orwick. And Chris is the Lightroom guy for sure at Lynda, or one of the Lightroom guys. He's, I think, one of the portrait guys at Lynda. He loves doing portraiture, and it's something that I've watched him, you know, work on an image. It's funny, we'll be recording, like he'll be in the booth next to me at Lynda, and you know, we'll do some recording, then we'll take a break, and then we'll do some more recording, and I'll take a break and I'll stick my head in and say, hey, he'll be working on an image. I'll go off and have lunch and do a bunch of stuff, come back, and he's still working on that same image on his break. So I mean, this guy loves portraiture, and this is a good title because he really gets in to using Photoshop and Adobe Camera Raw to work on portraits, to do things like adjust the background and to, you know, do wardrobe fixes and, you know, a lot of, you know, not so much just removing blemishes from the face, but a lot of, you know, structure for the whole portrait. It's an environmental portrait, so, you know, the subject is in some sort of setting, and he's really looking at the whole setting in this title. He has a lot of good tips for using Photoshop and ACR together. It's a nice, clean, helpful title with lots of good instruction, and I think you'll enjoy it. You can watch the introduction by going over to the Digital Story screening room at lynda.com. So it's lynda.com, LYNDA/thedigitalstory. You also can sign up for your 7-day free trial there and watch everything that's in the online training library. It's really a terrific deal. And especially if you have a little time to work on your game, this is an excellent way to do it. Spend some hours with Lynda and really add a few new tricks to your post-production work. It's an excellent title, and it's this week's Screening Room selection. Story number 4, we have a book giveaway. Remember, we did one a few weeks ago and I said we're going to do another. This is it. We're doing another. So our friends at Rocky Nook Publishing are giving away 2 print copies of The Portrait, second edition. And this one's easy. Last time we set up a Facebook page. This time Rocky Nook has set up a page for us over at rockynook.com/portrait-2nd, that's number 2 and D, -edition, Knowst-giveaway. And of course, the link is there in the show notes. A lot easier just to go there and click. All you have to do is provide your name and your email address, and you will be entered to win. And we're going to keep this open until March 3rd, 2015, until 11:59 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on that day. And then on Wednesday or Thursday of that week, which is next week, we'll pick two winners randomly, and they'll be notified by email. And I'll also put a post on our Facebook page, and then they'll be shipped directly to them. It's really, really a piece of cake. And the email that you provide will be used not only to contact you if you're a winner, but also goes on to Rocky Nook's email list, which is an excellent newsletter. And they're very good about not abusing their privilege of having your email. And if you decide that you don't like it, they make it very easy to unsubscribe. The book that we're giving away is The Portrait, second edition. It's a great book. We're giving away two copies. Just go over to rockynook.com/portrait-second-edition-giveaway or click on the link in the show notes. Enter your name and email, and then I'll let you know who won. And we'll get two copies of that book out there. Just a quick note about our photo workshop in Bodie in the Eastern Sierra coming up this June. So I had mentioned last week that the registration forms had gone out to those on the pre-registration list. And I'm glad I said that, because a few folks that were on the list didn't know that they had received their registration forms. They got lost somewhere in their inbox. And when they heard me announce it on the show, they wrote me and said, oh, I can't find it, or I did find it, or thanks for the reminder. Some of those people got to sign up. So if you were on the preferred list, you haven't got your registration form, please write me at Derek at the Digital Story to make sure you get it. We have, I think, one slot open. The preferred list is going to pretty much fill up the workshop, but we have one slot open. If you want to check in on that last seat, just go ahead and go to the TDS Workshops pages, thedigitalstory.com/workshops. Fill out the send me info form. It takes you literally 10 seconds to do it. Choose the Eastern Sierra workshop, and I'll let you know. I'll let you know if we still have the opening. I'll send you a registration form. All right, let's do a little virtual camera club news. Our photo assignment for February, which is slipping away quickly, is goodbye, and that's because it's going to be the last photo assignment that we do this way. So if you want to be part of the farewell, send your image to me. All the information is on the member info page, but basically you just attach it to an email and send it to Derek at thedigitalstory.com. And then I have a note from Red River Paper, and I haven't brought this up this year. I've been good about it in the past, and I haven't this year. But have you made your 6 archive prints for the start of 2015? Because prints are the one form of backup that, you know, makes no difference about technology changes, about compatibility, about any of that stuff. If you have a print done on quality paper with quality ink stored properly, then that will last most likely longer than almost any digital type of media. What I have recommended in years past, and I do myself, is twice a year I make 6 prints of my favorite images, and I do them, you know, to the best of my ability on quality Red River paper, and then I put them away. And that, and you think about it, if you do 12 a year, 10 years, that's, you have 120 archival images of your best stuff. If everything else goes bad, you still have those images left behind. The folks at Red River Paper make the perfect medium to put your archival prints on. And they have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. And we'll take you to our landing page there. And finally, a big thanks to the good folks over at Sizzlepix, SIZZLPIX.com. They also have a tile on all the pages of Digital Story. I hope you guys took advantage of the President's Day sale where you got the big discount. Right now, that sale is off. If you forgot and you wanted to, you know, maybe get a Sizzlepix made and you just didn't get it together in time, just go ahead and send me a note to Derek@thedigitalstory.com. Plead your case and I'll see what I can do. See if I can get you that discount. Sizzlepix, SIZZLPIX. It's like a retina display you can hang on the wall. Just beautiful output for your images on polished aluminum. They are eye-popping. And I tell you, at some point, you need to treat yourself to making one or two of your best images. Sizzlepix, put them on the wall and just enjoy them day after day. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. Hope you enjoyed all the goodies. Take a look at your gear inventory and see if there's a few things that maybe you might want to thin out and get some money for. And I'm working on some good stuff for next week, so make sure you come back and join me. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.